All right, welcome everybody to T-Touch for You Online Immersion Series, our 90-day program. We are on day 4. Oh my gosh. And welcome. Welcome to the newcomers. Welcome to those who've been with us all along. Welcome to people who are new to T-Touch and who are longtime people, practitioners, instructors. We have people from all around the world here. We're so excited for today's class. We have some, of course, incredible things planned for you, and we will also see what comes through as well. So we have a few little housekeeping things quickly again for Eleanor to give us, and then Linda will take us on yet another journey.
Okay, so welcome everybody. So just really quick regarding the time when we are sharing our stories, if we can please keep them very short, maybe 1 minute long, because it allows more people to share and keep people active in the class. And if it goes a little long, Linda will give you a loving, gentle reminder. Also, again, like I was saying before we started, I seemingly have control over muting, but I really don't. So if you accidentally unmute yourself, your picture will come up over the speaker and all the noise. So I'm doing my best. If that gets unmuted too many times, I may have to put a pause on your software program, which may block you from seeing the video. I apologize. So try to be careful with that. And also, if you have any questions, go into the chat box in the bottom of the screen. You will see chat. It'll be like a little bubble in it, and just write your question in there. People were doing that beautifully yesterday. And I think that's it. Can you think of anything else, Sandy?
There was something, but I just forgot.
The video, please be aware of walking with your phone or your iPad. So because of the bouncing, we may have to put a pause on that video. So we want you to get to be part of this, but we can't see the bouncy, if that's okay with you.
Okay, we're good. Okay, Linda.
So this vision that we had, this creating this community where together we create the world and the humanity we crave through the gateway of T-Touch, with the intention of remembering our connection to the divine spark in every cell in our body, has brought forth experiences with some of you who've been doing this work a long, long time in new ways, just reconnecting in this way. And it's been my dream and my vision that I would find what is this form of communication? What's so special about it? What is this cellular intelligence, which I've been getting from the beginning, this 1967, when I brought that $5 astrological chart and was told that I would develop a form of communication that would spread around the world. And in order to do so, I had to learn to trust my intuition. And what keep coming to me over the years is that there's this cell intelligence. What we're connecting with is cell intelligence. And I have to tell you, it kind of makes me cry when I think about it, because many people have said, you know, how did I have the courage to continue in the face of the fact that, you know, some people said, well, okay, Linda, you don't know anything about cells, so why are you talking about cell intelligence? The knowing that I had about that had nothing to do with knowledge. It had to do with this knowing, this intuitive sense that there was something here we were meant to find. And all these years that I've been seeking that, finally, I really got it when I read the words, the divine spark, those two words, the divine spark within, that was in the book of Ho'oponopono with Luke Bourdain. And I got it. And I realized then, as I started to share, you know, some of the, like the, this message that I wrote in my journal in 1992 that I read yesterday, that was a complete surprise. I mean, I have never read that since printing it out. I've never read it to anyone. I've never read it myself. And those words in there, that it's time that we, it's the time, made me realize that I have to share with you where T-Touch actually comes from what I have discovered. So I'm going to take you back to 1984. It was the first morning when a group of approximately 15 of us, and Eleanor was there, gathered together at Joder Arabian Ranch to work with Anna Wise. And Anna Wise was the director of the Boulder Institute for Biofeedback. And she had observed me working on a horse in Santa Fe and had asked if she could measure my brain waves, because she had, for at that point, more than a decade, been working with Maxwell Cade in the UK, measuring states of consciousness. And when she measured, she believed that I was working in what Maxwell Cade called the awakened mind state, which is a full state of brainwave activities in both the left and the right hemisphere. And I'm telling you this because all of you who are really interested in it, I want you to grok this as much as I do, because it really is a key to what this work has done for all of us who've been in it a long time. And so we were gathered together, and when Anna saw that I indeed was in this awakened mind state with a balance of both left and right hemispheres in beta, alpha, theta, and delta brainwaves, which I won't go into right now, but we will the next time. She wanted to measure students and to see if they were with these 1 1/4 circles also in that awakened mind state. So we were all set to be measured there. And on that morning, I took my journal and I went to the top of one of the hills behind the Joder Arabian Ranch. And I sat there waiting for the sun to come up. And with all of these poems or messages, I mean, in the poem form that come through, I just sit with my journal and they come. So I'm waiting for the sun to come up. And just as the sun came above the horizon, I wrote these words, "O Atlantis, speak to me." I was pretty shocked because I never thought about Atlantis, never wasn't interested. So I continued to write, "O Atlantis, speak to me. I know it's time that I can see the past and future again as one. I hear the call. I'm ready now. We must all gather, come together again. The pod was scattered, each learning alone. Finally, we've got it. We've come together to clone, to strengthen our oneness, our knowingness too. Our bonds have weakened. We must learn anew who we are. Together, what we promise to do. So awaken, dear friends. Our family is strong. Come together again to strengthen this bond, to renew our promise, to spread the word, to join our voices so they can be heard above the cries of fear and death. It's like kneading bread and adding leaven to expand the knowing that this can be heaven." And remember, this is 1984. When I wrote "above the cries of fear and death," I knew that it's not now. I didn't know when it was. Mm-hmm. And it's now. I mean, it is now what we're seeing. And I want us just, you know, I've been praying and just holding for the safety of all the people and the animals who are dealing with this Hurricane Francis right now, and mm-hmm. and so many other situations around the planet. It is above the cries of fear and death to remember that this can be heaven. It's the same message as the fig tree that I shared with you. And what that means to me, what I get is over and over, heaven is when we remember our connection to the divine, to the creator of all it is. And that's in every cell in our body. And that's why connecting through this gateway of T-touch with this basic 1 1/4 circles gives us that knowledge that we just have to go within to find this place of peace and reconnection. And so I came down that day, and we did the studies, which we're going to be talking about in the next class. And I went home 3 days later, and then something special happened that I want to share with you. It has to do with where T-Touch comes from. So I had a visitor at my home who is a well-known past life regressor. And she asked me if I would like to have a regression as a house gift. She was staying with a friend who was staying with me. And I said, oh, yes, it's lovely, because I've done some rather remarkable, really, really wonderful regressions. And so she said, so let's do, like, out of the blue, she, not knowing me at all, she said, let's do Atlantis. And I said, No, actually, I really don't want to do Atlantis. And then I thought, well, that's really not very trusting, is it? And so I said, oh, all right, well, let's see what happens. And I just lay down on the floor and went into this very light alpha state. And instantly, I saw myself standing on this boundless, enormous aquamarine crystal stage. It's like it was the aquamarine in the earth, and there were thousands of people gathered, and everybody was carrying these big crystals, and it was the end of Atlantis, and we were saying goodbye and making a promise that someday, when the tipping point was again on the planet, when again it seemed like we really needed to rally, that those of us who had been together before would find our way back together, and each person would bring a special gift of, you know, whatever. And my gift would be in the form of a very simple touch that when a person just did it without knowing anything, it would remind them, they would remember their connection to divine spirit without words, each in their own way, because there are so many ways of doing that. And when I said that, I heard myself and I started to laugh and cry, because just the day before I had received in the mail my first video. It was a 2-hour video of work with horses. And in the video, the producer had put 20 minutes of T-touch between people, which I thought, and a horse tape, is this going to go over? And in the end, he had recorded me talking, you know, reciting the message from the fig tree. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, my reputation is going to be ruined, and nobody is going to listen. They're all going to think I'm crazy. But of course, that didn't happen. And here we are. And this concept of creating this world and the humanity we crave, for me, it's about finding that place of trust, of compassion, of intuition, that is, being able to listen to these divine messages that come to us, the manifestation of divine consciousness. And that's what we're all doing here together. And the beauty is we just learn these different touches on ourselves and our families and our friends. And for those of you who work professionally in healthcare, you can share that with your people. That's what we're here to do. And that's what this combination of Sandy and Eleanor and I, we've been talking about this, and I am just so thrilled with what we're getting and how you're all sharing on the Facebook site. I'm in such a place of gratitude. So I would like to have actually Sandy and Eleanor share small stories of how T-Touch helped themselves, because that's what we want to do. And then in these 3 hours, we're going to talk about some self-help. Then we're going to do a whole hour on the wraps, and I'm going to feature Sandy with that, and you'll see why after. And then go on and do some more deepening review sharing about how this work is helping.
Yeah. Sandy. Yeah. So this past winter, there was a period where I was in a sense of despair, not feeling my sense of direction clearly, and was having a difficult time, right? I know, people have difficult times at times. And I mean, I was functioning and doing okay, but I was really, it was very painful. I was in a lot of anguish, actually. And Linda and I and Eleanor had begun talking about doing the online program. And I was really sitting, I want to point out as I'm sharing this, a couple of the elements and the nine elements. And one was where I began with this is I had a really strong intention. I really wanted to understand more deeply about this cellular intelligence that we're talking about and wanting to hold in this program. And so with that, really, like, what, just that curious questioning is really what I was sitting with. I started doing part of a sequence that I worked with the traumatic brain injury group. And since that group, interestingly, I had a number of minor head injuries. And so I was thinking about that. And I was like, maybe I need to deepen my practice. And so it was this about the connection. And so I did a sequence that I'm now calling brain integration. I don't know if that's going to be an official name, but that's what I'm calling it. And I started at the point of my shoulder, and I was doing I don't remember actually if I was doing clouded leopard or lying leopard, probably lying leopard, because I was lying down and that's how my fingers were literally laying along my shoulder. And I was doing the 1 1/4 circles, pause. At first I was doing them like a 2 second circle without much of a pause and the connection with a slide between. And then I just kept thinking, well, what is this cellular intelligence? What is this? Where's the divine spark? I'm not feeling it. Where is it? How do I get that experience right now in this, in all of what I'm experiencing, where I am right now? And what started to happen is intuitively, I slowed down the pause. I slowed down the touch a little bit, the tempo of the touch. I don't think it was a full 3 second circle, but it was a little bit longer than 2 seconds. And then I was pausing for anywhere from 5 to 30 seconds to a minute even. And I don't know that I had done that with myself before. I've intuitively done that with animals, but not really taken that kind of time with myself. And what started to happen relatively quickly is I went into a very different space internally. My brain calmed and quieted, and the angst that I was experiencing started to dissipate. And I felt, as I came up, I was doing this along here, up and over my head and down to the other side, and then I would go back again. Not exactly in the same line, I was finding different areas. And I felt like I was going through a gateway. But it wasn't out there. It was deep inside myself. And it was quiet. And it was incredibly peaceful. My brain that's prior was normally kind of jiggity-jaggity got very calm and very quiet. And I realized I was taking much deeper, slower breaths. And I kept doing that. And I, without going any lower on my body than this area between shoulder to shoulder, up and over my head, I felt energy move. I felt my feet and my legs. It was like pouring into my body. It was like I was pouring into my body. And I was like, I felt this connection with my feet. And it was like, oh, that, this is like grounding in a way that I've never really fully experienced. And I just kept doing this for like an hour because it felt so amazing. It just felt so different than what I had been experiencing moments before. And I was just in such a different, moving towards blissful state. And then I shared with Linda, I was hesitant because, you know, I don't know why. And I shared with Linda and she got so excited. And so then we kept talking about it. And then I kept practicing because I was like, I don't know if this is going to be so with anybody else. And she did it. And I can, you know, why don't you talk about your experience?
Well, that rush that you felt was like a wave of gentle water that just flowed through my whole body. And I just did the same very slow, very intentional connect each with each touch and stay there completely quietly. And the way you described it, Sandy, was so easy to follow. I've just been following this as you were talking, and I got the same flow. It's such this beautiful wave, like it's like, maybe it's like a cell-to-cell communication. Like, it's really beautiful feeling. And it takes time. I didn't get it at first. You have to breathe, because that's one of the things we'll bring in later in the details. The importance of the breath, the importance of the connection. And it just following your description and having that flow, it's a huge gift. It took me also to a whole different level from the intention of staying present in that way. And as you said, connecting, what is that divine spark?
Yeah.
Connecting.
And since then, all I do is even think about that, and I enter back into that state. It's incredible. It's so different than what I've experienced with the touches before. It's a whole other dimension and range, and it feels like I'm very present here in this world, very present, more present than before, and I have this connection at the same time. And I believe that it is that divine spark, that divine intelligence. And I'm very intuitive to begin, you know, naturally, and it enhances. And my whole trajectory of everything that's happened since then is shifting and continues, because it's like it went through that, like I was going over here with yuck, 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 not feeling good, and it and aligned into a whole different, you know, who I really am. And I know that all of that has been clearing and moving, and it's I have different perspectives with it now. So
thank you so much. And we'll come back to that, and we'll have a chance to talk about that in the third hour and actually practice that. And Eleanor has an experience that is really wonderful about one of the many, many, you could have a dozen, but I would love it if you would share the experience you had sharing the heart hugs at a medical conference with a group of, you know, left brain doctors.
Oh, yes. It was a room filled with over 240 surgeons, oral surgeons and manual therapists, and mainly surgeons. And so you can imagine the life of a surgeon is to normally see people while they're under anesthesia. So they're not actually making eye contact and speaking with them. And to me, one of the biggest things from T-Touch that I have used all these years is the heart hug. And when I teach workshops, I start with a heart hug. And then an hour later, we're back to the heart hug. And then we integrate the heart hug again. And then we end with the heart hug. And then we text each other with heart hugs. And there's something, you know, and I love being left-brained and right-brained, but I talk about the science of what is creating. So it gets them to understand that this is really real. And then they experience it again and again. And so I was there to explain the science of what this is doing and having them experience it. So in 45 minutes of me up there talking, within the first moments, I had them have the experience. And I'm looking at everybody in the audience and, you know, little by little, after each time, I got more doctors and more doctors. I had the whole room except for one guy. And there's this one surgeon who's sitting off to the edge, Mr. Know-It-All, and he's the bigger macher in the whole group. That he's the keynote speaker. He's the guide of this certain type of surgery. And he would do it for a few moments, and then he would stop, and he'd lean back in his chair and fold his arms like this. And then we go back again, and he'd do it again a couple moments, and then he'd lean back in his chair. And I'm like, I'm going to get that guy. So I sent myself out while I looked across the room and sent myself out to him, even though I'm looking across the room. So it's this way of this divine intelligence in connecting even through the heart hug. And at the end, you know, I'm thinking, you know, he gave a little bit of this, but, you know, everybody was really enthralled. When we finished, we had a break. I walked outside. One surgeon comes up to me and says, with tears in his eyes, and he looked like he was an ex-football player, big, husky guy, and says, "I think you've changed my life." And I said, "Really? In what way?" And he goes, "My wife thinks I don't love her. And I think this weekend when I'm going home, she's going to ask for a separation. And we've been married for many, many years. And now I understand what I can do with her, because I'm going to go home and I'm going to sit across from her and we're going to do the heart hug together and make this soft eye contact with each other." And he had tears in his eyes and he says, "You have to understand, I'm a surgeon. All day long in people's mouths. I cause people discomfort. I'm exhausted when I get home. And she thinks I don't love her, but I do love her." Then just then another surgeon comes up and bumps him out of the way and says the same thing. And another one. And then lo and behold, the main surgeon comes up and gives me a hug. And I said, "Oh, thank you." And he says the same thing. "I think you have changed my life. My wife is now going to know how much I love her. I can go home every day after work and spend 10 minutes doing this with my wife, reconnecting with my wife, and then going back to my cave. And she will know that I love her because I do. And this is the way I can show her my true love. And he had tears in his eyes. And there were seven surgeons standing around saying the same thing. And I said to him, I said, you know, I thought you weren't so enthralled with this. And he said, no, no, no. I just feel so deeply in my heart that I have so much pain for everybody that I could only do a little bit because I'll be able to do more and more so that I can fill my heart with the goodness of love in the world.
Wow.
That's the heart hug, Linda.
And you know, Eleanor, yeah. I would love if you would share with everybody what you and Steve do.
Oh, every day. So my husband is a trial lawyer. So he fights and argues for a living. And sometimes he forgets and he comes home and he's ready for a fight and an argument and kind of defensive. And now he knows we sit down from across from each other. We take a hold of each other's arms gently. And then we put our hands on our chest. We have a portrait of us, by the way, with this, standing across from each other, giving ourselves the heart hug with softness in our eyes, gazing at each other and letting everything in the world be its thing, but knowing that it's our love for each other. And in that heart hug, there is that deep connection in the hardness of what happens every day in life, that we can come back to this place that this brings us with such ease to give us back that love and compassion and connection with each other. Thank you, Linda. Amen.
Thank you, Eleanor. Oh. And let us just, Eleanor, will you lead us right now in the heart hug and just whatever it comes to, let us all do this.
My pleasure. Mm-hmm. So just as you're sitting there, allow yourself to feel comfortable and easy. Just paying attention to your breath and your ease. And bring your hands onto your chest in any way that makes it comfortable and gives you comfort. And slowly imagining that you have this beautiful clock on your chest, that 6 o'clock is below and 12 o'clock is above. And gliding your skin around this clock. It can be clockwise or counterclockwise, whatever works for you, going a circle and a quarter and letting it pause and then letting it down. And again, taking this circle, gliding your skin over your bones, over your tissue, a circle around the clock, going all the way around, whether you come back up to 3 or 9, and then gliding back down to 6. And the next time, as you do this, starting at 6, gliding around your comfort, wherever you go, around this whole smooth clock, gliding your skin over your connective tissue and your bones, allow yourself to take in a breath. And let it out through pursed lips as you come down to 6. take your time and do this a few times, where you just go around the clock, a circle and a quarter, and when you make your way back down to six, and as you start to come back up the quarter of a circle, bring in your breath and a smile, and let the breath out through pursed lips. This softness in your face with this grin as you can breathe in through your nose. Going around this clock and letting it out through pursed lips. Bringing in this love and this joy, this smiles, and these hormones, the neurotransmitters that give you joy and happiness. And slowly let your hands down and just feel how you feel.
Thank you, Eleanor.
Thank you, Linda.
And what I'd like us to do now is pick up your pen to paper and just for a minute, just write whatever comes to you in this place, whatever comes to you. Thank you. What came to me as from all of this feeling is this deep feeling of peace that I get when I do this, and the fact that from the work that we've done with HeartMath Institute, we know, and also from Robin Bernhardt, actually start looking at our brainwave activity when we can be in a place of high stress and this looping thoughts. I don't know how many of the rest of you get these, but once those thoughts start, just these words that you use over and over, the amygdala, the part of the brain that controls our emotions, is highly charged. And that's what's activated. And as soon as we do the heart hug, what happens is it brings us to the activation of the forebrain. So we have choices, and it brings us to a place of heart coherence. And we're going to be talking about that, the actual science behind the heart hug, in the next, when we meet again in the fifth class. Would anybody like to share in the chat just a couple of words that you wrote? Let's have
Cindy. Gary has a question. Cindy, I'm so sorry. It's talking to Cindy Lou. Linda, Gary has a question. So I'm going to see
great
if I can find Gary.
It's under, it's
Gand.
Gand. One sec. There we go. Unmute. Okay, wait. There we go. Can you hear it?
Can you? Yeah. Hi.
Hi, Gary.
Hello. Yeah. Hey, Linda, I have a question.
Yes.
For some people that can't do the heart hug for themselves, is it okay to ask permission and do it on their body to help them feel the heart hug?
Absolutely, Gary. And maybe you would like to share one experience of you doing that with somebody. Would you like to do that?
Sure. We volunteer at a nursing home, and some people are not able to use their limbs. So we used it somewhat on some people, but I wasn't sure if it was appropriate. So we do it in a class. We show it, but I wanted to know for sure if it was appropriate to have them feel, to get that breath and that relaxation to open up and unwind.
And what has been your experience? Just think of one person that you perhaps.
They started breathing better, better relaxation, able to take deeper breaths versus a shallow breath, and just a smile and happiness come over their face.
So I think you got the answer, right?
Yes. I just wanted to verify that it was okay.
It's beautiful. And I want everybody to meet Sandy and Gary from Wisconsin. They've been many years at my class, I think 4 years of my, I teach a 4-day class in Minneapolis each year, and they're always with us, and they do this beautiful work with the senior centers in their area. So welcome. It's lovely to have you with us. Really wonderful. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Linda.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Other questions or feedback about this? Who'd like to just share a couple of words just that you wrote on your journal? Because by you sharing it, really intensifies or magnifies the experience we have.
Oh, Cindy Lou. Hi, Cindy Lou, go ahead.
My thing that I wrote down was about forgiveness. I work in a really high stress business, and there's a lot of rejection that goes on in the business. And sometimes I feel so rejected. And so I have a few times remembered when I'm in the angst of, oh my God, these people, and I'm so angry with them for rejecting me. And by that, I mean, they just didn't call me for the job, and I wanted the job so badly, but I didn't get a call. And so I immediately think all of, you know, worst case scenarios. So I stop where, you know, when I can, and I'll do them. I'll do these heart hugs and breathe and forgive. I forgive myself for being so, I don't know what the word is, angry at them. And then I forgive them for being so stupid as not to call me. Not true. That's a joke. I don't really feel that way. Right. But I do try and forgive myself for feeling that way towards them, and I try to forgive them for whatever it is I think they have done as well. So it actually has helped me a lot.
Beautiful. Thank you. And I would like to remind you all, some of you know this who've been with me many times, that when we're angry, understanding that anger comes from a place of fear and is a cry for help.
Yes.
And I learned that from The Course in Miracles in 1981. And when I read that sentence, I thought of the animals, horses and dogs I'd punished out of anger. And or dogs who were theoretically aggressive or horses who were aggressive. And if you see that basic concept, aggression comes from a place of fear and is a cry for help. It's really helpful. And now that we have having Ho'oponopono and the heart hug, the combination, Lulu, is very
helpful. I do that Ho'oponopono as well now that I know it. I just forgot to say that. But I do add that a lot because it really does help me get out of that fear. It's a fear. It's a fear of never having another job, never being called, never, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so if we put that out and combine it with a prayer,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like, wow, thank you. And when I say a prayer of gratitude for if you go to the place of gratitude for mm-hmm. all the work you've had in the past, when we focus on that we've had, that brings more energy in that direction rather
That's
than
true.
We won't have.
Yeah. Yeah.
So just start going to that place of gratitude.
Well, I do that too. You know, I do. I get a little bit of all of it.
Got it. So
and I try after one thing, well, then I'll go to the next and I'm thinking, okay, I'm really going to kick it up now. And
okay, stop. Sorry. I got it. We'll hear for the rest of you.
Okay.
Thank you so much for sharing. I know you're speaking for many. There was...
Jeannie has a question to ask regarding... Marie Miller had a question, and I can read it, or Marie, would you like to...
Yeah,
Marie, would you like to ask it?
Yes.
Go ahead, please. You're unmuted.
Oh, okay. I was working today with two clients. I was teaching a companion animal workshop, but we were talking about tea touches. And they had both been before to tea touch workshops and were both concerned because they have naturally got quite low heart rate and the tea touches made them feel faint. So I suggested to them that they actually do the tea touches more quickly.
On what? So that last thing? I didn't hear the last.
I suggested that they do sort of 1.5 second circles and not to do slow circles. But I knew I was coming here tonight and I wanted to check with you that was the right thing to do or whether they shouldn't be doing tea touches if they've got a low heart rate.
Well, think about with a low heart rate. First of all, it would be interesting. Did you know that they were doing them slowly before?
Yes.
Yes.
They were taught to do them slowly.
Interesting. Because this is exactly what we're going to be practicing in the third hour today.
Oh, cool.
Yes. So we'll come back to that.
I can have an erratic heart rate. And I know if it's low, I do faster touches.
Exactly.
And when it's high, like the last time I was in hospital a few weeks ago, my heart rate was shooting up and down. So when it was really high, I was doing slower touches. And when it was low, I was doing faster ones. And that seemed to help to balance it because they gave me, when I went in, it was shooting up to sort of 160, coming back down to 80, and it just was going up and down. And they gave me beta blockers, two lots of intravenous beta blocker, and it didn't really make much difference. And then when they put me on the ward, I just continued to work. And all of a sudden, my heart just went back into its normal rhythm. They don't know why it happened. It's some sort of an electrical impulse. They don't know why it happened. And they don't know why it stopped. I think I know why it stopped, because I was actually working on myself. But they weren't really accepting of that. But it just seemed very interesting to me today. It was a very small workshop that I was teaching. I only had four people there, and two of them had this low heart rate, had experienced being at workshops before and feeling a little bit faint. And I just thought it's so opportune, because we were right.
So Marie, thank you so much. We'll come back to that in the third hour. Because that is exactly where we want to go. And this is why I wanted our practitioners to get more T-Touch for You, because we know the tempo affects the heart rate. We've had that for years. We've known that. So thank you. Perfect.
Thank you.
Do you have time for another one, Linda?
Let's go on now, actually. Okay. And because we could stay on this for the whole 3 hours, but we get a sense of where we're going. What we want to do, and if you have a burning question, come back to this sort of thing in the third hour. Write your questions down so that we can come back to that. What I wanted to bring in here now, in terms of the self-help, is emphasis on the ear work, because we know with the techniques that we do on the ear work that we know that we can save a life, we can keep a person out of shock or bring them out of shock, and we have many, many, many cases of this. The reason we have so many cases is that in Germany and Switzerland and Austria, in order to graduate in the 3-year program, they had to write 100 case studies. And of course, we have lots of ear work in that. So I want you to know that. And because we have some people who are new, they are not aware of this work with the ears. I'm going to just tell you very briefly how I started with the ear work. Was 1958, and I had an Arabian mare, Bint Galitta, who'd had a 3-day colic, an impaction, and in those days you didn't do surgery, it wasn't an option. And so my vet was on his way to euthanize my mare, and I intuitively just wanted to have a nice way of saying goodbye. Her respiration was her pulse was around 80. It should be 40. Her temperature was subnormal. She was ice cold, and I just intuitively reached for her ears. She was at that point standing quietly, and I just stood from the base of the ear, started sliding out to the tips of the ears. And when I first touched her ears, they were ice cold and totally wet. And I just intuitively, standing in front of her, just did this slow work from the base of the ear sideways out to the tips. And I have no idea how long I did that. I might have done it. I'm sure it was 15 minutes. That's a long, quiet time. And suddenly, the ears got dry. And they got warm, and she lifted her tail and defecated, and that was the end of the impaction. And it wasn't until 1979, we're talking from 58 to 79, when I discovered, it's a whole other story, working with a veterinarian, how and why that ear work worked, because you can affect the digestive and the respiratory system from working the ears on horses. And then one day, I can't remember the first time it happened. Somebody must have been, I think it's actually somebody who got bucked off their horse. And I was thinking, of the ear work for my horse while we were waiting to get help for her. And I thought, well, I'll just do the ears. And it turned out it reduced the pain right away. It certainly took away the fear. You just do it very carefully. If somebody's hurt, you don't want to, you know, move them much. It turned out that she had a broken pelvis, actually. And now I remember who it was. And we just kept doing these ear strokes. And it made a huge difference to her. And we have hundreds of these cases now. We have a case, I'm just going to tell you another one, because every time I do this, somebody who's heard that story winds up needing it. And it was on, it was out on a mountain ride at Bitterroot Ranch, and about 10 years ago, this one, and a very experienced rider was stepping off her horse, caught her foot in the saddle, scared him, the horse bucked her off, hit her head on a rock, and she was unconscious. Just happened that Doc Fletcher was there on the ride, and he'd been coming to, he had a pain center at that time in Texas, and he was there with, I wasn't there, it was one of our teachers who was there with the group, and she started doing ear work on the person, and for took them 2 hours to get, she was unconscious the whole time, to get help up there. And she came, she was in a coma, she came to about 2 weeks later, and she totally recovered. And the reason I'm telling you this is that Dr. Fletcher said, had we not had the ear work, there was nothing that he could do on the top of the mountain that could have kept her out of shock or brought her out of shock like that. And what I'm doing now, and you're going to get access actually to these videos that we made of the ear work. Can you see this? You put the thumb behind, and I want you all to do this now because it's so valuable for so many things. It doesn't have to be shock. I'm talking about, you know, that's the extreme. But just if you're not feeling well, I start like this with the thumb behind, and I take my folded forefinger. Can you see Sandy like this, the way I'm showing it?
Yes.
Okay. I take my folded forefinger and then I do a like a slide slightly upward. And then I come into this little valley, oops, of the ear right here. And we're going to talk about that more later. And the reason that works, I come there and I can do a little circle and then it'll slide slightly upward. Now I move my thumb up higher again. I come in this third section. The ear, a little circle, and a slide upward. Now be very gentle. Don't do this hard. I always have a tendency to do this too hard because I'm thinking of these extreme cases. Be careful there. Do you see, like, I have a soft part there in the top of my ear, but some people have the little, like a little hood there, like a little roof. Be very respectful. And the thumb on the back of the ear at this point, I do the circle there, and I come up over the top. Now, 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. And as you do that, there are so many things. You can be feeling nauseous. You can be feeling like you're going to pass out, like Eleanor did. She told about yesterday, right? You can even imagine it. If you're car sick, or seasick, we use it so much for seasickness on boats on our trips. If you're air sick, you can give it to the person next to you, which I've done numbers of times when it looked like somebody was going to throw up. You can ask them, would you like some help? I can show you what you can do so you won't throw up. And it really works. We used it a lot in South Africa where we worked with caregivers of children and infants with AIDS and who didn't have an appetite. You can stimulate the appetite with this. It's really helpful. What else I'm missing? I know I'm missing a couple of really important things, but if you've got the flu, it's one of the things you can do. I'm going to do it on the other ear. I just wrote this in the Facebook actually today. advice for Heidi, who is in bed with the flu and couldn't join us. So if you work on the rim of the ear, just that rim, and because that boosts the immune system all the way up. We've used this for caregivers working with children with cholera in Haiti. And if you're in a hot area like Haiti, it's really important, wet your fingers, because when you wet your fingers, it will keep you from heating up. Otherwise, what happens with this ear work, especially when you come in this little vagal nerve area right there, that's where you'll raise your temperature. The cool thing is, if you have a subnormal temperature, you can raise it. And if you have a temperature that's too high, if you do these gentle work here with water, it helps to regulate. Just like Marie was talking about the heart hug, regulating the pulse, the heart rate.
So, Linda, correct me if I'm wrong, but I find that if I just stay focused on the outside, I can end up getting hot. But as soon as I go to the inside and then come to the outside, I can use the same pressure, whatever that was, and not get hot. What does that mean?
I don't know, because I'm the opposite.
Oh, so if you go in, you actually get hot.
No. If I have a subnormal temperature, I'll go into that area. I can heat up by going in that area. And along the rim, working just with boosting the immune system, I don't get hot.
But remember,
I don't want to go too much right now.
Okay.
We'll come back to those details.
Got it.
In the third section. So keep those questions, because I'm sure many of you have experiences that you would like to share. And we are at the end of, I actually went a little over Sandy.
Okay. So we're going to take, how long of a break do you want to do today, Linda? So
7 minutes, right?
We can do 7 minutes. So we'll come back at 10 after. Was my clock correct?
And if any questions you have, please write them so you remember. Because the next section, we're going to go into the wraps with Sandy, but then we'll have the last hour for a lot of details.
Okay.
Got it.